Welcome to the SOAP Bible Study Series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. We're in the Gospel of John, and we're pushing the halfway point.
At this point.
We're getting really close to halfway through. And yeah, we talked about last week some stuff that John is including that we don't see in any of the other Gospel writers.
Right.
And we see some more of that here
this week. More of that today?
Yeah.
Well, so today we're going to be in chapters 9 and 10. And to back up a little bit so we can get some continuity, Jesus was teaching in the temple, and previously he said, "I am the bread of life." And now he says, "If anybody is thirsty, let him come to me." Same idea, one's with bread, the other's with water.
Mm-hmm.
And the crowd was divided on who he is and who he was, but most of the Jewish leaders weren't.
Yeah, they were all divided.
Nicodemus at least stuck up for him and said, "Our law doesn't condemn a man unless we hear from him." Right. So guys, we got to hear what he has to say, and then we can make that decision.
Yes.
So the Pharisees went out to Jesus, and they set him up. They brought a woman who had committed adultery, and Jesus said, you know, "Let the one who has a sin throw the first stone." And Jesus ended the discussion with, "Before Abraham, I am," right? Telling everyone, especially those Jewish leaders, that he is God. And they, of course, didn't like that at all. So Jesus, now in chapter 9, he seems to be in Jerusalem, but he's not in the temple anymore.
Yeah, the end of chapter 8 says that he left the temple area.
Probably pretty quickly.
Yeah, so on his way out, sounds like it, maybe, you know.
And he saw a man that had been blind from birth. And we're going to see four interactions with this guy as this guy becomes a believer, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And the disciples asked, when seeing this blind man, "Rabbi, who committed the sin that caused him to be blind?"
Yeah.
And there's a lot right in there.
Yeah.
Right?
People still today, it's sort of a karma type theology.
Yeah, right. You must have sinned.
You must have sinned. And in his case, he was born blind. So they thought either he sinned before his birth, you know, in the womb. Some people go further back and they wouldn't have believed in a reincarnation necessarily. But some people today believe, you know, it would have been a reincarnation karma type thing. Or they say, well, maybe his parents did. And he's just suffering the consequences because his parents sinned.
Yeah.
You know, which... you know, that was part of their theology.
There could be too.
Yeah.
Right. Jesus replies, "He was born blind so the acts of God may be revealed through what happens."
Yeah. Now, some people will take that to say, "Ah, well, God made him blind so that Jesus could walk by and heal him." I'm not willing to go quite that far. I don't think God causes all disasters and causes. Is it possible that that's true? Yes, it's possible. Yeah. But it's just as possible that
he used it for his benefit.
Yeah, this happened. God allowed it to happen. It was a natural, something happened, a disease or whatever. But God is going to use it to glorify himself and point people to Jesus.
Right. So Jesus spits on the ground, makes some mud, puts the mud in the man's eyes. And again, this is on the Sabbath. Not again. I don't think I brought it up before. And then he told the man to go wash in a pool named Scent. And there's really no indication now that this man is a believer. The man does go, listens to Jesus. He washes, and then he returns with his eyesight.
Yeah.
It took a while, but the neighbors finally understand that this is the blind man that's been in our neighborhood all our lives.
Yeah, right. He was probably out asking for alms.
Right.
If he's on the Sabbath and people are going to the temple or whatever. Yeah, he's begging.
Yep. So the neighbors take him to see the Pharisees, right? After all, a miracle has occurred, and the leaders don't believe he was ever blind.
Yeah.
So they call in his parents.
Yeah.
And the parents gave some answers, but you could tell they were afraid of the leaders, and they were very tentative, and they end up saying, "Look, he's an adult. Ask him."
Yeah. Well, this gives you a couple of things. This gives you an idea of how the Pharisees ran things, right? Very dictatorial. I mean, they literally were going to excommunicate the parents if they didn't answer the question the way that they liked and denounced Jesus.
Right.
There's a funny thing in here. Before we get to the parents, they're the first grilling of the formerly blind man, right? Yeah. He's like, "So what happened?" "Well, this is what happened," right? "Okay, well, where is he?" It's like, don't know. Number one, I never saw him. You know, I went, I washed, and I came back, and I wouldn't recognize him. You know, right. It's just sort of a, just they're so against Jesus. They knew it had to be Jesus,
right?
But like literally, the guy couldn't pick him up out of a lineup,
right?
Like, you know. Nice.
So the formerly blind man was now called back in, and he saw through the Pharisees' deceptions on the questions that they were asking him, and he stayed loyal to what happened.
Yeah.
And the blind man said, you know, this is remarkable that you don't know where he came from, and yet he caused me to see. If this man was not from God, he could do nothing.
Right.
You know, just schooling him.
Which is very similar. Again, we see in these themes that come through, because Nicodemus in chapter 3 said, we know you're from God because no one can do the things that you're doing, the signs that you're doing, if God wasn't with it, right? The guy is saying the same thing. Right. By the way, this guy's never named. This entire thing, he's no name.
Right.
Right? Just a guy.
Right.
And he is calling
out. He does have some sense, though, right? And he's able to speak at least a little bit eloquently from the standpoint of standing up for himself and making some playful fun with the Pharisees.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, didn't think that, and they threw him out. It's
fun.
They just threw him out. We're not going to get anywhere with him.
Yeah, really?
So Jesus again talks to the man and tells him that he is the Son of Man. And the man believes, and some of the Pharisees heard this and asked Jesus, well, are you saying we're blind too? And Jesus said, look, if you were blind, you wouldn't be guilty.
Yeah.
But since you claim to see, your guilt remains.
Yeah.
That had to be hard to hear.
Yeah.
And I see this as the Pharisees were guilty because they thought they already understood God's will, and they thought they were doing God's will. And because of that, they missed Jesus' message, which means their guilt remains.
Yeah, because they were rejecting him, and in doing so, they rejected God. It doesn't matter what they claimed, right? By the way, this is the account where we get that line, that great line from the hymn, Amazing Grace. I once was blind, but now I see.
Right.
That's what this guy said. This isn't just a line in a song, right? This is literally this guy's life. I was blind. I had never seen anything before. And Jesus walks by and now I see. I mean.
Right. How cool is that?
Yeah.
So then we move into chapter 10. And in this chapter, Jesus spends the first half of the chapter comparing himself to the good shepherd. And it's all over the place. And, you know, this is an analogy where Jesus is talking about sheep, but he means human. And he says things like the shepherd comes through the main door, right? The shepherd doesn't, he's not going to sneak in through the window. He's coming through the main door. And that's what Jesus is saying that he's doing.
Yeah. Right?
And then he says his sheep are among other sheep.
Yeah.
And then his sheep know his name.
Yeah.
And how cool is that?
We actually get two I am statements here because buried into this one, you know, the whole thing is about the shepherd. I'm the good shepherd. Yeah. The good shepherd lays down his life. But he also includes in here, I am the door of the sheep. Two of the great I am statements in here. And being the door links to being the shepherd because from what we understand in ancient times, if there was a sheep pen, it may not have had an open and closed door type thing. And so sometimes the shepherd himself would lay in the opening as the protection against predators, but also to make sure that the sheep didn't get out. And so he was functioning as the door, right? And Jesus is like, I'm not just the shepherd. I'm not just watching over, but I'm the door. I'm the only way in and out, which is going, he'll build on that in chapter 14 when he says, I am the way, right? But it's the same type of thing.
But Jesus continues to talk about himself. He says, I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep. My sheep know me. I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep. And they will come together into one flock with one shepherd.
Yeah.
I mean, There's no way those people would have understood at that time. This time, maybe we're reading too much into it, but this is us.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This is us.
Yeah. I think so. This is one of the places where the church, which didn't exist yet at this point, but the church is called a flock. Jesus' right. flock. We see that in Acts chapter 20. We see that in 1 Peter 5.
Yeah. Right. And one church.
And yeah, right. one group, one church, you know, yeah. of all believers, Jew and Gentile. Yeah,
exactly.
They did not have any clue about that, and Jesus wasn't giving any more information yet.
But just write that down.
Sort of breadcrumbs, right? He's dropping.
And then a little forward thinking, I lay down my life of my own free will, and the Father gave me that authority.
Yeah.
In fact, as a commandment.
Yeah.
Gave me that authority.
So that I may take it back again. One of the questions is, well, who raised Jesus from the dead? Right?
Yeah.
He did. And the Father did. And the Spirit did. God did. But Jesus himself actually was able to take his own life back. And I think that's really important. He was not killed. His life was not taken from him. Right. He voluntarily gave it, and he was able to take it back. Yeah, which is huge.
So that's the first half of this chapter. In the second half, Jesus is at a Feast of Dedication, also called Hanukkah or Festival of Lights.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So this is a new time marker. This pushes us forward a couple of months. Okay. Now, Hanukkah, just briefly, everybody knows of Hanukkah as far as, it's just a Jewish thing, right? It didn't come into existence until about 150 years before Jesus. This wasn't one of the things in Exodus, you know, or Leviticus mm-hmm. that God has been telling them to do for 1,000 years. This was relatively new, but it was very traditional by the time Jesus came around, you know, about 150 mm-hmm. years or so. And so it's sort of cool, even though it wasn't one of God's commands, one of God's established feasts, it's sort of cool. This is the only place, as far as I remember, that Hanukkah actually shows up in the Bible. Hmm. It's never in the Old Testament because it wasn't there, right? And then in the New Testament, to see Jesus was there at Hanukkah. Okay. I mean, it's a time marker, but it's also so Jesus is following some traditions. I mean, he's not completely bashing his culture. Right. It was a way to worship God, even though God didn't require it.
So they're back. He's back in Jerusalem. This is the same Jerusalem, like you said, a couple months before. He left when the Pharisees picked up stones and were going to kill him.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is the first time he's back, but.
Well, probably because he'll be back now in the winter. So now we're even closer to Passover. You know, Passover is going to be, you know, in April. So let's assume this is December. We're 4 months away.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
So it seems like the Pharisees had another plan, right? If he shows up again, here's the plan.
Yeah.
So the Jewish leaders surround Jesus and they ask, how long will you keep us in suspense? If you are the Christ, just tell us. Jesus didn't tell them plainly what they wanted confirmation, you know, otherwise they would have just killed him. Instead, he said, look, I already told you. And you do not believe me.
Yeah.
Yeah. The deeds I do in my Father's name testify about me. So he's basically saying, I'm doing these miracles through my Father.
Yeah.
And he didn't say this time. And you're not saying it.
Yeah.
You're not believing it.
Yeah. It's the same story. Every time he shows up, they accuse him of the same stuff. Yeah. He answers the same way, in a sense.
Right.
You know, it's just the same thing over and over and over.
So then he says, my sheep listen to my voice. I know them. They follow me. Again, banking on what he said in the first part of the chapter.
Yeah.
And then he ends with, the Father and I are one.
Yeah.
So he doesn't even wait till the end, right? Short speech. Jewish leaders pick up stones. And then he says, I am showing you many good deeds, all from the Father. Which one of these are you stoning me for? And they replied, for blasphemy, because you are claiming to be God.
Yeah. That is effectively when they went to Pilate and he says, we have a law that someone who claims to be God, that's blasphemous and he must die. And that's what that was their whole thing. That's why they finally had him executed. Now, Pilate didn't care about that, so they had to come up with another reason that would look good on the Roman books. But the whole reason they had him executed was you being a man, claim to be God, and that don't fly. Yeah.
So Jesus answered, and he quoted Psalm 82:6. Mm-hmm. Doesn't the Father call us gods, being humans?
It's so funny because he sort of spins it back, and he's trying to make this minute theological. But I mean, he's arguing. I mean, he's splitting hairs at this point. He's, but he knows that's what they like, and you know, he's like, right. Well, but what about this?
Yeah, and then he ends with, look, if I don't perform the deeds of the Father, then don't believe me.
Yeah.
But if I do perform, even if you do not believe me, believe the deeds.
Yeah.
Believe the miracles so that you may know I'm from the Father and the yeah. Father is in me. And then they, of course, tried to capture him again. Jesus leaves, goes across the Jordan to stay. And then at the end, it says, many believed in him.
Yeah. 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 So it's not done. He's not done with his ministry quite yet. But for the most part, by this time, he's backed off of his big stuff. Now, he's in Jerusalem, so anything in Jerusalem will be big.
Right.
But for the most part, he's backed off of the big stuff, and he's doing personal things now. And Matthew, Mark, Luke show us that. You know, John keeps it sort of big until the end, or highlights the big stuff, I should say, until the end. But, yeah, so we've moved. So we went multiple months. We fast-forwarded a couple of months. We saw some big declaration, some big statements here, right. A big miracle, healing the blind man. Nobody can do that,
right. You know,
especially someone who's born blind. No one could do that. So he's been proving himself over and over and over for who he really is. And their hearts were just so hard against him. Yeah, they were the blind ones.
Right.
You know, they were the blind ones. So we don't want to be the blind ones. We want to read. We want to understand. We want to believe and live out our faith, right? And that's what we talk about with our discipleship process here at Oak Tree. The path is living out our faith. And part of that is reading and studying and growing in as we read the Bible. So hopefully this has been helpful to you, encouraging to you. If you have questions or comments, make sure you ask and send those our way. We love to respond to those. Subscribe, share this with friends and family, and we will pick up here with one of the biggest miracles in the Gospel of John next week. It had never been done quite like this anywhere else in the entire Bible. And so really excited to be here next week. See you then.
Bye.